Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Brian Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Transitions LLC 23. Our guest tonight is Dr. James G. Matlock, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, what's up with you today?
Did you see in the newspaper that there was a report that scientists have discovered seven planets surrounding a star in a different solar system that they believe is very much like, well, seven of the planets are very much like Earth, and they feel that they all could sustain life, which got me thinking.
Yes.
Dharma, we don't talk much about life on other planets, but let me just posit this to you: if you ask the general public, not us or not people members of the foundation, but just the general population, which would they be more surprised at if a discarnate materialized before them? Somebody that had they know that already died appeared to them,
uh-huh.
Or if an alien, and they would know who was alien because it didn't look like us, appeared before them, which would be more surprising? I guess it boils down to the more people believe in life after death, or that there's life on other planets.
I'm going to say you're going to get a 50-50 response there.
That would be my guess.
Yeah, because the people who would tend to believe that there's life after death or an afterlife or something like that, they're either getting that notion from whatever religious body they follow, or they've had some experience that makes them understand and believe that there's something more than just the physical world. Aliens, though, people who believe in aliens are usually people who are open to the concept that we are not the only ones in this universe. So they have surrounded themselves with the concept of a closed universe where everything exists, which is kind of almost the opposite of the afterlife would be bigger than the universe. It's something that's non-physical, that has no bounds.
Yeah, and of course, if you read the reports, the anecdotal reports of people who claim to have encounters, with alien beings, these alien beings, materialize, before them, it's not dissimilar to the anecdotal reports of people who see materializations, of dead people. I mean, how would you know the difference? We know that people in spirit can materialize in different sort of a thought process in different forms. They can appear at a young age or at an old age with clothes, without clothes. So, how would you even know? Maybe the people that have had UFO experiences really are seeing afterlife manifestations.
No. I was kind of going with, until now you just twisted my brain around a whole different concept, was that the aliens or that type of appearance before somebody that we know to live in this physical world and recognized as belonging to this world, an alien coming from another world or coming from another universe or coming from another source can still be the same source that the afterlife exists in. That maybe there's a universe just like ours, but these aliens exist in that universe, and the same way the our deceased people can penetrate the veil back into this physical world, well, then why can't an alien or an entity belonging to another universe be able to do the same thing? So the same way our deceased people can come in and visit us, aliens can come in and visit us, and maybe we can also then at some point visit the alien universe?
Well, we know that people that have had near-death experiences and various out-of-body experiences report visiting other universes. Maybe it is intertwined. And who's to say that when we, if we can visit these other, you know, universes and other planets and other solar systems, and we're going to be talking about reincarnation later, but who's to say that we have to reincarnate back to this earthly existence? Maybe we can reincarnate to one of those other planets that the scientists just discovered.
Right, and it all makes sense, though. Just think if you can expand your mind to accept that there's a non-physical world, you must also then maybe take that open-mindedness and say there are other physical worlds, semi-physical worlds, worlds that operate under different laws than our laws of gravity. And so there's got to be. If you're going to accept aliens or you're going to accept an afterlife, you still have to be open to other forms of quote-unquote life.
Yeah, and what about so near-death experiencer is able to, free from the body, you know, to go and visit these other, another planet in another solar system. And if that planet is inhabited, the residents, the perceiver that sees this person that has a near-death experience may think that they're seeing an alien.
Of course they're seeing an alien. That person doesn't belong there. It's an alien. Yep. I think the whole thing is very cool.
Right.
And very, very possible.
Yeah, so they may not think that it's somebody that it's already deceased. They're just thinking they're being visited from another civilization.
Right. Well, so we all need to open up to that.
True. We are going to have our break. We come back, we're going to have an interesting discussion with Dr. James Matlock about reincarnation and reincarnation research. Stay with us, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken, even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. James G. Matlock. Our sponsor is Transitions LLC 23. Bob?
And Dr. James Matlock received his PhD in anthropology from the University of Southern Illinois at Carbondale in 2002. He's worked at the American Society for Psychical Research. He's also worked at the Rhine Research Center, and he's presently a research fellow at the Parapsychology Foundation. Jim's chief research interests are the history of parapsychology, anthropology of religion, and reincarnation. He teaches a 15-week online seminar course on reincarnation research and theory and maintains a Facebook group called Signs of Reincarnation. His present book was co-authored with Dr. Erlender Haraldson and is called I Saw a Light and Came Here, Children's Experiences of Reincarnation. You can find out a lot more about Jim and his work at his website, jamesgmatlock.net. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Oh, thanks, Bob.
And, you know, maybe you can just, a good place to start off. I mean, a lot of people think of reincarnation in spiritual terms, but they don't realize that it's something that can be studied, you know, using scientific protocol. So how do researchers tackle the subject of reincarnation? What's the process?
Yeah, that's an excellent question because you're quite right. A lot of people don't realize that. They just assume that it's not something that can be studied scientifically. Well, Ian Stevenson, and many people would know his name, is really the pioneer of a more scientific approach to this. And what he did is go into the field and talk to people, talk to children. He discovered that that particularly in Asia, but also in the United States and Europe, all around the world, really, that there were young children who claimed to have past life memories. So he went out and he found these children and talked to them, talked to their families, talked to everyone who had heard them say anything, concentrating on firsthand witnesses, and this was an important part of his methodology. He wasn't just collecting stories, he was actually, you know, investigating them. And he learned very early on that besides just talking about their memories, that the children also behaved in certain ways that were in line with the people that they talked about. And even more strangely, they often had physical signs of various sorts, birthmarks, you know, people may be familiar with them, but a variety of other physical things as well that relate them back also to the person we're talking about. We call the
right.
Previous person, the previous personality.
Yeah. So, I mean, the book that I mentioned that you co-authored, I Saw a Light and Came Here, it has some extraordinary cases of past life memories, mostly solved cases. So, from a research perspective, tell our listeners what constitutes a solved case.
Yeah, a solved case is simply one in which a previous person, that is the person that the child, typically is the child, is talking about. So a solved case is one that we've identified the previous person, and an unsolved case is one where the child talks about a previous life, a previous person, but we haven't figured out who that is.
Mm. Now, many of these children report memories of events that led to their death, but some also report experiences in between their death and rebirth. So are these descriptions consistent with the experiences that were reported by NDEers and channeled accounts the descriptions of life between lives?
Yeah, that's another very interesting question and a good one. About 20%, I mean, a very high percentage, surprisingly high percentage, of these kids do talk about what happened between their deaths, as they feel it, and their births. In some respects, yes, they are very similar to near-death experiences. Structurally, they are. That is, in a near-death experience, somebody seems to die, right, and typically is told it's not their time, and they return to the body, and then remember and tell, you know, what happened. In these intermission memories, as we call them, they often are met, not always, but instead of being told their time hasn't come, the person says, well, come with me, and escorts them on. And then they're either shown where to be reborn, or they choose themselves. They choose their new parents and end up there. So the structures, you know, overlap in that way and are consistent. There are a lot of phenomena, though, in near-death experiences that we don't necessarily see. We sometimes do see the light, but you know, not always the darkness and some of the other phenomena that are popularly associated with NDEs.
Yeah, I think I recall one of the accounts in the book, a child named Pranima who was floating. She described floating in semi-darkness for a few days, and then actually viewing her funeral, and then seeing some light. So that seemed to be consistent with some of the near-death experience reports.
Yes, it certainly is, and that's a very that's an unusual case. But Pranima did mention the darkness, and she also she gave us the title of the book. She's the one that said, after the darkness, she saw light, and then she came here to her present life.
Mm.
So this is a quote from her, more or less.
Yeah. Jim, do these children differ psychologically from children who don't recall past lives? I mean, have you studied that?
Well, Erlander has.
Yeah.
earlier did studies in Sri Lanka and in Lebanon, and Jim Tucker, you mentioned having,
right.
I think you've interviewed him as well on other occasions. He also has studied these children. They do differ in some ways, in some significant ways. And again, it's quite interesting. They tend to be unusually bright. They tend to be unusually socially adjusted, socially well adjusted for their ages, very mature. So it's as if something is carried over, you know, from the previous life that sets them apart from children who don't have the memories.
You know, the researchers of reincarnation, past life memories of children, I mean, they face the same battles that a lot of people involved in psi research and survival research always face, and that is that people, skeptics will say that that these cases could be explained by the, you know, I think one researcher posited a theory that children were somehow absorbing thought bundles left by the... So what about the theory that these children are gleaning information psychically from information fields and that these are not actually cases of reincarnation? I mean, how do you answer that?
Right. Well, I think the best answer to that is, like I said before, they're not simply memories. That is, it's not simply images that they come to their minds, and you know, and facts and so forth that they're talking about. They could have pulled, in theory, from, you know, from somewhere else, from an Akashic field or something like that, or by psi, from other minds or something. There are also these behaviors. And then the physical things. Now, the interesting thing about this this thought bundle idea is that it would perhaps allow for some of the behaviors and some of the other things. The idea was simply that after death, the personality or the psyche sort of disintegrates, but hangs around a certain place. And then is incorporated into the psyche of a child who happens upon it. But besides the sort of strange notions behind that, there are a lot of difficulties with it, too. These children don't always come anywhere near the place where the person died, so there isn't any clear way that they could have come into contact with these thought bundles to incorporate them in themselves and so forth.
Yeah. Yeah, and it makes sense. I mean, I can see, a lot of people believe in Akashic field, you know, the vast storehouse of information. And even in, like mediumship research, you can understand extracting possibly, you know, bits of data, of information from a field. But how do you extract the personality, you know? And the same would seem to apply in these reincarnation cases where they take on the personality, you know? So to me, I would lean...
Right, excuse me. Yeah, exactly. It's just much more than simply the information. And in the reincarnation cases, more than simply the personality, because you've got these physical things, too.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, one of your expertise is in anthropology, and why are the American cases so few compared to other areas in the world?
There are not only fewer cases here and in the West in general. The ones that we do hear about are also weaker in terms of their phenomenology.
Yeah.
In terms of the number of statements that the kids make and how strong the behaviors are, you know. And consequently, they're much less often solved than the Asian cases are. You know, it's a problem we don't really have a good answer to yet. These cases turn up in certain areas. Northern India, but not southern India, for instance, among the Druze in Lebanon, but not among the other populations in Lebanon, you know, and so forth. So it's hard to say. Well, I guess what I'm trying to get at is that, and the Lebanese example wasn't the best one, because when you get outside the Druze, you don't have the belief so much. But in their pockets, throughout Asia, you find pockets, areas of these cases, and then in the rest of the countries, you don't find them so much. China is this way, as well as India. So it doesn't seem to be as simple as the beliefs are suggesting the cases. It's more complex than that. But we don't. Stevenson thought that perhaps there was a genetic factor here that was involved somehow, and I think he could have been right on that. That would explain why you find these cases more often in certain populations than others, wouldn't it? I don't think that it would be a gene for reincarnation. It would rather be a gene that makes it possible to retrieve these memories from the subconscious.
Interesting.
So I think it would be something that controls that part of the brain that allows for memory retrieval. Let me say one other thing in relation to that. The cases could have suggested the beliefs, you see. So that if the cases are naturally occurring in some areas, that could be why the belief is stronger in those areas than in those places where the cases are less frequent, because they wouldn't happen often enough to suggest or support the belief. So that could be part of this too.
Yeah, it seems to be a very difficult protocol in this field, because there's only a certain window of time to investigate. These children stop remembering or talking about past lives when they get older, right? So what's the age range of children who recall past lives, and when do they usually stop?
It's surprising to many people. The kids with these memories start very early. If they're going to talk about a previous life, it's usually by age 4 or 5, and they'll start as early as 2, or even as soon as they start to speak. Sometimes their first words turn out to have something to do with their memories. It's not recognized at the time always, but sometimes the first things they say. So the main window for these cases is 2 to 4 or 5 years, and then after that they sort of taper off. Many children by age 8, by the time they go to school, are forgetting or, have forgotten. And if not by then a few years later the memories tend to fade. And then after that you need to talk not to the kids but to their parents or to other people who have heard them talk about it. Talk about the previous life when they were, when the cases were active.
Yeah. Are there some of these children where the past life memories persist into adulthood?
Yes, there are. In fact, that's something that Erlinger looked into too. Again, in Sri Lanka and Lebanon, among the Druze, where he did most of his work, he did studies of the persistence of the memories, and he found that actually as many as a third of them did retain some memories into adulthood, not all of the memories that they had in childhood, but some of them at least. So yes, not all children do experience the fading.
A lot of people, as I mentioned, they think of reincarnation strictly in spiritual terms, and they believe that we return to life in order to, as they put it, learn lessons and to grow spiritually. But there's always a conundrum, because you come into this incarnation without seeming to have any recall of the past life. Thus the problem, if you don't know what lessons you need to learn, How do you learn them, and how do you progress? What are your thoughts on this whole concept?
Well, our past lives can impact us even if we don't have conscious memories of them. That's one of the things we've learned. Because there are these behavioral impacts, as well as the conscious memories, we can still be influenced by our previous lives in terms of our interests, in terms of, you know, more negative psychological things, you know, phobias or, you know, psychological complexes, things like that, can have their roots in previous lives. We can be affected in that way. And, you know, so, but what we just, moving through lives, it seems to me, is just a continual process of change. We change as we go through, you know, our present lives, and we just continue to change, you know, through death and into and through our next lives. So, you know, I think there can be growth that goes along with that change, even if we're not consciously aware of what we did before.
Well, you know, one thing I learned from reading the book, I didn't realize that Pythagoras, you know, going back, not only remembered a past life, but he founded a community where he encouraged, you know, all to recall their past lives through contemplation. Do you think that meditation is a technique that can help to foster a recall of past lives?
Yes, actually. And this is true with adults, too, maybe even more than kids. One of the factors in assisting the recall is sort of getting the brain out of the way, because our brains, you know, when we're embodied, you know, we have brains, right? And our brains limit us, as well as they facilitate a lot of things, but they also limit us in other ways. So any technique like meditation that sort of gets the brain out of the way will help these memories come through. We see the same thing, for instance, in dreams. People have past life dreams. People will have images come to them, both kids, you know, hear this from adults, maybe particularly, say when they're going to sleep, when they're, you know, just waking up, praying, anything like that.
Why is it, I found that most, if not all of the serious researchers of reincarnation discount the evidence from past life regression. Why is that?
Yeah, that's another excellent question, because that work, of course, is much better known than the type of studies that I'm talking about. The reason, there are several reasons why serious researchers don't put much stock in it. And they basically come down to, it's very difficult to verify them. Most of the memories, if we can call them that, most of the things that come up under hypnosis don't check out. There are very few solved cases that have come up under regression. And in many of them, you know, it's possible to trace the things to things that were heard or seen, maybe forgotten. That process, it's called cryptonesia, where you get exposed to something and then have forgotten it, but it sits there in your subconscious and comes back up, bubbles back up into your conscious awareness at some point. It's problems like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I guess also you're in a hypnotic state, so you're subject to suggestion. So I guess that's another issue.
That's an important issue too. Also, yeah. I'd like to point out that hypnosis is not a good memory enhancer. It's known not to be, and it's known to be very problematic as a memory enhancer, which is why testimony based on hypnosis is not allowed in court. So it's not just, you know, so we're on pretty good ground, those of us who are skeptical of the regression things.
Okay. We're going to have to go to a break. We're talking with Dr. James Matlock, The book is called I Saw a Light and Came Here, Children's Experiences of Reincarnation. Jim's website is jamesgmatlock.net. We have a lot more to talk about, so stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more. The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death. Heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. James G. Matlock. Our sponsor is Transitions LLC. We'd like to remind our listeners to check the events page on our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Check that regularly for all events and announcements. Our next webinar of the year is Mediums and Mediumship, Historical Highlights. presented by Dr. Carlos Alvarado on March 15th, 2017 at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You can calculate that for all other time zones. Our annual Holiday of the Earth raffle with the drawing set for Earth Day, April 22nd, is up on our website, just waiting for your entry. You can win as many as 5 medium readings with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, Bobby Allison, Heidi Jaffe, Nancy Marlowe, Ginger Quinlan, or Dustin Livers. It's only $5 to enter, and that $5 goes a long way in providing services to both the bereaved and the curious. Our annual grief retreat is open for super early bird registration on the website. We do recommend booking early, as last year the rooms at the retreat filled and some attendees had to stay off-site. If you're booking early, please keep in mind our no-refund policy. This event only gets better each year, so plan to join us this July 14th through 16th. Be one of only 50 guests who come from across the globe to spend a weekend in a beautiful and peaceful setting with like-minded people, all learning that our loved ones are still with us. The weekend is all-inclusive and features spirit communication with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Rebecca Ann LoCicero, Joe Peretta, and Gina Simone, working alongside our other professionals and facilitators. It also includes a variety of activities and small breakout workshops, all designed to heal. And please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, great nonprofits, and Wellzoo. Just remember to name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. And if you are a business interested in advertising on this show, contact us via email at businessmembership@foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Dr. James Matlock, co-author of I Saw a Light and Came Here. His website is jamesgmatlock.net. Jim, earlier we were talking about how personalities might carry over, and then also I assume certain phobias and fears might be carried over. I mean, is that something that children talk about often? Are they fearful of something? Like if they died in a certain way, is there fear involved when they reincarnated?
Yes, very often when there's a violent death, and there very often are violent deaths in these cases. The kids were murdered or died in accidents or various ways, all the different ways that one can die showed up in these cases. But where there are violent deaths, there often are phobias associated, with them. It's almost, it's as if the sorts of responses that a person would have shown had they lived, after this, turn up after they're reincarnated. Erlinger, in his studies, likened this to post-traumatic stress disorder, that the kids seem to have some sort of PTSD as a result of these traumas.
Mm. And of course, I know Erlinger has and others, Ian Stevenson, have talked about these birthmark cases. Now that is really, really difficult for a lot of people to wrap their heads around, that children bear a birthmark or a physical disfigurement that matches, their previous life. Any theories on how that might be possible?
Yeah, I do have thoughts on that, but let me preface this by saying, I know. I first started reading these accounts around 1980, and when I first got into this, I would skip over all of the birthmarks and the physical thing. It just didn't make any sense to me. I couldn't figure it out either, and it took me some time before I could accept it and begin to try to figure out why. And for Stevenson, it was the same way. I mean, their first few birthmarks and physical anomalies, congenital physical things that he heard about, he didn't really put much stock in, and that later on he did, and he became very interested in them, and actually wrote a very large a two-volume monograph about them. As I thought more about this and tried to figure out how they could be reproduced, I realized that what seems to be involved in reincarnation is simply the survival of the spirit, right, of consciousness, of the mind.
Right.
If our memories are in our mind, for instance, in our subconscious, say, then if the mind becomes associated with a new body, then the memories are there. They just need to be brought up to conscious awareness. Well, from there, I realized, could not consciousness itself be impressing the new body? Because we have a lot in parapsychology. We have a lot of studies that show that our minds can influence our bodies, and we sort of know that anyway. I mean, we're all sort of aware of that in some way. That's what psychosomatic medicine is about. That's what the placebo effect is about, and so forth. So perhaps in reincarnation, what's involved is that the incoming mind, the reincarnating mind, impresses consciously, or doesn't even have to be consciously, unconsciously, simply by virtue of having these images of its previous life in its mind, impresses those on the new body. It seems very logical to me, at least, a way of understanding it. In another way, it seems kind of odd, but there's a lot of reason to think that these birthmarks and the other physical things do not occur as a matter of course. They occur sometimes, but not always. So you have to look at the psychology, I believe, in order to understand them. And, and that would be consistent with what I'm suggesting here.
Yeah. Well, it certainly, doesn't sound illogical, that consciousness can imprint a body. It's sort of like psychokinesis, the mind affecting matter. And, consciousness is the conduit in some way.
Yeah, exactly. That the same PK effect is involved in, say, psychic healing, of another person as well as of ourselves. So, yeah, there's nothing really that outlandish in this idea.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know that this question can be answered by research, more of a metaphysical question, but, what are your thoughts about whether or not it's a choice to reincarnate? Some choose to and some choose not to. Any thoughts on whether we all reincarnate or just some of us?
Right. It's a sort of a complicated question because we can only answer in terms of the cases that we have, right?
Right.
And only a small percentage of all the people who have died and have these memories. It's only the cases that we have to go on. For me, I think it's easier to imagine that we all reincarnate than that some of us do only. It makes more sense to me logically that reincarnation would be a routine process than trying to figure out why it would happen sometimes but not always.
Mm. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I wanted to answer the first part of your question there, because right. The first part of your question was about can we choose, or at least that's the way I interpret it, can we choose where we're born, or choose to be reborn or not to be reborn?
Right.
I'm not sure that we can choose not to reborn, to be reborn. I think it may be just a natural process. Now, in these intermission memories that we were talking about earlier, there are many times the children talk about choosing their parents, right? Or
right.
They talk about how their parents were chosen for them. In other cases, we don't have that information. We don't really know how they came to the new life. But it seems that we can at least sometimes have enough control to choose our new parents. Anyway, I just wanted to get that point out.
Yeah. I know that a lot of people also, when you talk about reincarnation, they think that, you know, that karma is a major, plays a major role. You know, if you were a son of a bitch in a past life, you pay for it, maybe pay for it in the next, you know. But I take it that you don't think that karma is necessarily a key element in reincarnation, right?
Not in that way.
Yeah.
You're right. Many people sort of associate karma and reincarnation. They sort of go together. And it's not just me, and Stevenson too, Jim Tucker, none of us who have worked with these cases see much evidence of karma in that sense. The other thing to say, I mean, this here I'm drawing on my anthropological background. You also have reincarnation beliefs in a lot of tribal societies, but without karma. And in the Druze in Lebanon, where Erlinda worked, again, reincarnation without karma. So karma is not necessarily associated with reincarnation to begin with. It just so happens that, our ideas of reincarnation have come from India, or theosophy, which is based a lot on the Indian ideas. And so we have that idea about it. But in fact, if we look at the cases, we don't really see evidence of it.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time. I wish we had more time to get into some of these tribal beliefs that you've been reported throughout history, because I know that you've written extensively about that, but maybe you'll join us again. We have been talking with Dr. James Matlock. The book is called I Saw a Light and Came Here, Children's Experiences of Reincarnation, a book that Jim co-authored with Erlinda Haralton, who many of our listeners are familiar with. Jim's website is jamesgmatlock.net. Thanks so much for being with us, and hope to talk to you with you again real soon.
Well, thanks, Bob. I've enjoyed it. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Have a good evening.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Michelle Hunter, Christy Richardson, Janice Barber, Paul Robarbs, Rod Sutherland, Chase Young, Eugene Brown, Letha Beam, Alice Young, Watona Robarbs, Linda Ellis, Evelyn Ingram, Cynthia Post, Helen Montalto, Michael Tim, David Haith, Glenna Irwin, Marianne Pierzga, Stanley Mullen, Donna Mello, James Rafferty, Diane Archangel, Isabel Ginsberg, Vince Mataya, Lauren Ramnath, Rich LeBly, Veronica James, and Alex Hanna. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to a fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.